Lecture 22, Avoidance, Paranoia, and Other Disorders.
We previously looked at four personality disorders that involve patterns of overly emotional, dramatic, and erratic behaviors: the antisocial, borderline, histrionic, and narcissistic disorders. In this lecture, we'll talk first about a cluster of three disorders that involve excessive anxiety, and then a cluster of three others that involve eccentric behaviors and distorted thinking. I'll start with three personality disorders that each involve a high level of anxiety: the avoidant, dependent, and obsessive compulsive disorders. Now, there's absolutely nothing wrong with being anxious or afraid. In fact, anxiety is our friend in that it warns us about possible dangers and motivates us to take actions that help to keep us safe. But anxiety becomes a problem when it's so persistent that it interferes with a person's life on a regular basis. That's when it becomes a personality disorder. When we talked about social anxiety earlier, I noted that everybody experiences social anxiety from time to time when they become concerned with how they're being perceived and evaluated by other people. So many of us feel nervous when giving a talk in front of a group or being interviewed for a job or being at a social gathering where we don't know anybody. People differ in how often they feel socially anxious, but social anxiety is perfectly normal. But some people are so consistently worried about what other people think of them that their anxiety interferes with their lives on an ongoing basis. Now, oddly, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders has two diagnoses that involve a high level of social anxiety: social anxiety disorder and avoidant personality disorder. But in the DSM, social anxiety disorder is classified as an anxiety disorder, and avoidant personality disorder is classified as a personality disorder. So given that this lecture is about personality disorders, we're going to look at avoidant personality disorder here. A person with avoidant personality disorder is chronically preoccupied with being criticized, disapproved of, or rejected across a wide range of social situations. As a result, people with avoidant personality disorder are not only exceptionally anxious, but they also avoid a wide variety of situations in which they have to interact with other people. So, for example, they have a great deal of difficulty working in jobs that involve social interaction, and they have trouble meeting people, making friends, and finding romantic partners because they're so afraid of dealing with other people. Avoidant people sometimes have satisfying relationships with family members or a close friend, but only if they are certain of being liked and accepted. And even in their closest relationships, they tend to be inhibited because they're afraid of doing something that will lead to disapproval. Underlying their extreme anxiety, inhibition, and avoidance are deep feelings of inadequacy. People with avoidant personality disorder see themselves as inept and unappealing and inferior to other people. So very low self-esteem is a central component of this. This is obviously not a good way to live, and people with avoidant personality disorder have somewhat unhappy and unsatisfying lives. They can certainly entertain themselves with their personal interests and activities, and as I said, they can form connections with friends or family members. But their basic needs for acceptance and belonging are not being met, and they go through life feeling alienated, watching from the sidelines as other people have social lives and friends and romantic partners, but usually being too afraid to jump into the game. Somewhere along the way, many of us have had a friend or family member who depended on us too much. They were anxious and really clingy, and they may have driven us a bit crazy by getting in touch too often and asking us to help them with all sorts of things that normal people should be able to handle on their own. Of course, people differ in how much they need other people's help or support, and that's fine. But when an otherwise normal person has this kind of very needy relationship with just about everybody and can't seem to function on a daily basis without help from other people, the person might qualify for a diagnosis of dependent personality disorder. But where do we draw the line between the normal and even healthy ways in which we depend on other people and the excessive dependency of a person with dependent personality disorder? People who qualify for a diagnosis of dependent personality disorder need, or think they need, constant help from other people to function in most major areas of their life. They even have trouble making everyday decisions, such as deciding which shirt to wear or what to eat for lunch, without advice and reassurance from other people. This lack of confidence in their own judgment and ability also leads them to have trouble starting projects or doing things on their own. They're too afraid that they won't know what to do or that they'll do it wrong. For example, teenagers who have dependent personality disorder may want their parents to decide what clothes they should wear, what they should do in their free time, and who to hang out with. Now, that's obviously a rather unusual pattern for teenagers. Highly dependent adults usually depend on a spouse or maybe a parent to help them make these sorts of everyday decisions. People with dependent personality disorder firmly believe that they are incapable of functioning independently, but they can actually do okay when they know that someone else is supervising and watching over them. So it's mostly a matter of exceptionally low self-confidence or self-efficacy rather than being truly incompetent. In addition to being too reliant on other people for help and advice, people with dependent personality disorder go to great lengths to get nurturance and support from other people. So they usually behave in ways that will lead others to help them. So, for example, they might offer to help other people in unusual or excessive ways. They sometimes do favors for other people that are inappropriate. Yes, it was nice they did that, but it was sort of weird. Their goal is to get the other person to reciprocate by being available for them. And they have trouble disagreeing with and standing up to other people because they're afraid of losing the person's approval or support. So they're very nice, helpful, compliant people, but it's motivated by a need to keep other people in their corner. There's an emotional component to dependency as well. People with dependent personality disorder often feel uncomfortable or helpless when they're alone because they're afraid of not being able to handle whatever situations might come up, not being able to take care of themselves. So they often structure their lives around having other people around for support. And when someone they depend on is not available, they urgently look for somebody else. One downside of relying so much on other people, in addition to becoming clingy and annoying, is that highly dependent people often don't learn what they need to know to manage their lives on their own. So dependency begets more dependency. In some ways, dependent personality disorder may look a little bit like borderline personality disorder, in that both disorders involve a fear of being rejected or abandoned. The difference is that people with borderline personality disorder react to the possibility of abandonment with feelings of rage and start making demands, whereas people with dependent personality disorder react becoming anxious and even more dependent and urgently seeking someone to provide care and support. Dependent personality disorder also looks a little like avoidant personality disorder, because people with avoidant personality disorder can become very attached to and dependent on those few individuals with whom they have social connections. And both dependent personality and avoidant personality are characterized by feelings of inadequacy, excessive sensitivity to criticism, and a need for reassurance. But for people with dependent personality disorder, the primary concern is about being taken care of. Whereas for avoidant personality disorder, the focus is on avoiding negative evaluation and rejection. The third disorder in the anxious cluster, obsessive compulsive personality disorder, is going to take a bit of explanation because there are two psychological problems that have the term obsessive compulsive in their name. There's obsessive compulsive personality disorder, which is what we're going to talk about here, and there's obsessive compulsive disorder, which is something else entirely. Now that's pretty confusing. The condition that we aren't going to talk about is obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, which is characterized by the presence of true obsessions and/or compulsions. Obsessions are recurring and persistent thoughts that are intrusive and unwanted. The person can't stop thinking certain things. So obsessions would be things like thinking all of the time about germs or getting sick, or obsessing about sex continually to the point where it interferes with normal life, or always thinking about hurting other people. Compulsions are repetitive behaviors, or sometimes repetitive mental actions, that a person feels that he or she has to perform, like obsessively washing your hands dozens of times a day, or having to read the numbers on people's license plates out loud as you drive down the road, or not being able to stop hoarding things. Obsessions and compulsions are not tied to normal activities, and they usually create a great deal of stress for the person. But the person with OCD is helpless to stop their unusual repetitive thoughts or behaviors. That's OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. But that's not exactly a problem with the person's personality. It's not just some extreme pattern of otherwise ordinary behavior. Rather, the thoughts and behaviors that characterize people with OCD typically deal with unusual obsessions and compulsions that don't have much to do with reality. So we'll set OCD aside. What we're going to talk about is obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, which is an obsessive preoccupation with order, perfection, and self-control. In many ways, it's like being exceptionally high in conscientiousness all the time, even when it doesn't matter, and even when one's attention to detail is dysfunctional. Obsessive-compulsive personality disorder is like conscientiousness gone wild. People who qualify for a diagnosis of obsessive-compulsive personality disorder are preoccupied with organizing the details of their life. So they're big fans of lists, schedules, plans, and rules, having everything in its place, doing everything just right. And they become quite uncomfortable when things are not organized and orderly. Of course, many of us have to-do lists and planners to help us keep track of important tasks. But people with obsessive-compulsive personality disorder organize their lives in ways that don't matter all that much. They worry about trivial details and plans. And sometimes the process of planning and organizing becomes as important as the activities that they're trying to plan and organize. Obsessive-compulsive personality disorder is also associated with perfectionism. Doing things well is important, but compulsive perfectionism differs from functional perfectionism in two ways. First, compulsive perfectionists worry about getting things perfect in areas in which perfection isn't needed. So they might have perfectly organized closets, or a perfectly manicured lawn, or a perfectly planned vacation. Any one of these might be okay. But if you can't help yourself from trying to make everything perfect, you might qualify for a diagnosis of obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. Second, compulsive perfectionism can interfere with getting many things done because the person won't finish a task until it's absolutely perfect. For example, a person might rewrite and rewrite a report at work to make it perfect without really improving it all that much, and thus waste time that could be devoted to other projects. So the person misses deadlines, which creates added distress for someone who is focused on order and planning. Because of their concerns with doing things well, professional people with obsessive-compulsive personality disorder are often so devoted to their work that they don't engage in leisure activities or have much of a social life. They can always do more at work, and they can always do it better. People with obsessive-compulsive personality disorder are often workaholics. And when they do try to relax, these individuals often approach their hobbies and recreational activities as tasks to be mastered. So they plan and organize and schedule and control what should be spontaneous, enjoyable activities. Obsessive-compulsive personality disorder is one of the most prevalent personality disorders in the United States, with an estimated prevalence of about 2.4% of the general population. Now, obsessive-compulsive personality disorder is obviously a double-edged sword. Obsessive-compulsive traits in moderation may be very adaptive, particularly in situations that reward high performance. So people with this disorder often do a great job on things. But when people overdo it and try to be organized, conscientious, and perfect with everything they do, even when it doesn't matter, and even when it interferes with their life, these characteristics can become maladaptive. The third and final cluster of personality disorders identified by the DSM involves eccentric behaviors and distorted or unusual thinking. In my view, these disorders don't really hang together all that well. They're just three more ways in which unusual or extreme patterns of inflexible behavior can create problems for people. The paranoid personality disorder is pretty clear-cut. As its name indicates, it involves a pervasive distrust of other people. As I mentioned earlier, sometimes being distrustful and suspicious is entirely appropriate. But if you find reasons to distrust many, if not most of the people that you deal with in life, and you're not in the mafia, then the rigidity of your response suggests a personality disorder. Paranoid personality disorder manifests in a number of ways. Most importantly, people with paranoid disorder suspect, without sufficient evidence, that people are deceiving or taking advantage of or harming them, or at least that people might be planning to hurt them. So they're preoccupied with doubts about the trustworthiness or loyalty of other people, including their family and friends and romantic partners. In addition, people with paranoid personality disorder have a bias to perceive others' actions as harmful or threatening. For example, they tend to interpret other people's innocuous behaviors or remarks as being insulting or threatening in some way. They often read malevolent intentions into other people's actions. Not surprisingly, people with paranoid personality disorder tend to be very private people. They're reluctant to share personal information or confide in other people because they're afraid that the information might somehow be used against them. They also tend to hold grudges against people they think have done something bad to them. And they're less forgiving when someone has hurt them in some way. To get a diagnosis of paranoid personality disorder, the person can't show any evidence of schizophrenia or other disorders with psychotic features. Essentially, that means that they can't have lost touch with reality. In the case of paranoid schizophrenia, people often have hallucinations in which they hear or see the people who are supposedly out to get them. Or their beliefs about the plots against them are clearly not credible. It's not really likely that a foreign government is spying on them. Paranoid schizophrenics can't distinguish what's real from what's going on entirely in their minds. In contrast, people with paranoid personality disorder don't have hallucinations or delusions. And at least on the surface, any particular suspicion they have is not necessarily unreasonable. But once one sees the whole pattern, it's obvious that the person is globally suspicious and distrusting. Some of the personality disorders we've discussed involve an excessive concern with one's social relationships. So for example, borderline personality disorder reflects extreme reactions to rejection. Histrionic personality disorder involves an intense desire for social attention. Avoidant personality disorder reflects excessive fear of social interactions. And dependent personality disorder involves excessive dependency on other people. Schizoid personality disorder, the second of our final cluster of disorders, is quite the opposite. People with schizoid personality disorder seem to have little need for other people. They don't care much about social connections, so they're rather detached from normal social relationships. Schizoid is another one of those unfortunate terms. The word schizoid literally means resembling schizophrenia. But schizoid personality disorder doesn't actually resemble schizophrenia very much. Schizophrenia is one of the most serious psychological problems that involves profound disturbances in thought and emotion, and that typically involves psychotic symptoms, such as hearing voices or experiencing hallucinations or having delusional thoughts. That's not what we're talking about here. Instead, schizoid personality disorder is a pervasive pattern of detachment from social relationships. A schizoid person doesn't appear to desire or enjoy close relationships with other people, not even family members. People generally enjoy interacting with other people and regard their social relationships as important. Even people who are very introverted are motivated to interact and have close relationships, just not as much as extroverts do. But people with schizoid personality disorder seem to lack this basic human motive. They simply don't care about having relationships with other people. They don't even seem to care whether other people like them. And they seem rather indifferent to both compliments and criticisms. So not surprisingly, they almost always choose to do things by themselves and live pretty solitary lives. They usually don't have any close friends or confidants, except maybe relatives, such as parents or brothers or sisters. And they seem to have little, if any, interest in sexual relationships. If you can think of somebody who is a classic loner and who seems to be okay without close relationships, they might have schizoid personality disorder. This pattern of social disconnection and isolation is usually accompanied by flat emotions. They don't take much pleasure in any activities, but they aren't upset by very much either. It's as if they're detached emotionally from their own lives. So they usually display a bland exterior and come across as aloof and maybe a bit self-absorbed. Interactions with schizoid people are usually pretty awkward. You not only get this clear sense that they don't care about interacting with you, but their lack of ordinary emotional reactions is unsettling. They don't reciprocate other people's gestures or facial expressions. They don't necessarily wave back when you wave or smile when you smile. More generally, they don't respond appropriately to social cues, so that they seem socially inept, awkward, and self-absorbed. These social skill problems can create difficulties for their work life, given that most of us have to work with other people. But people with schizoid personality disorder may do just fine if they can work under conditions of social isolation. Estimates are that 3-5% of adults in the United States would qualify for a diagnosis of schizoid personality disorder. If you can't think of anybody who fits that description, it might be because they're not likely to be the people that you're going to run into. They're not out and about. You might, however, know some people who could be classified as a secret schizoid, but you wouldn't realize it. A secret schizoid lacks the motivation to interact and form close relationships and has a flat internal emotional life, as I just described. But a secret schizoid has learned how to play the part of a normal person. So they may appear to be socially engaged and seem to be interested and involved in interacting, but they still lack any interest in closeness and remain emotionally detached. You've probably done this yourself. Think of situations in which you had to interact with other people, but you didn't want to. Maybe you didn't like them, or maybe you were preoccupied by other things and didn't have the energy to deal with people. You were totally unmotivated to be there, and you had no interest in interacting and no emotional connection to the people. But you plastered a fake smile on your face and went in and played the role of somebody who cared. That's how the secret schizoid gets by in life all the time. Many personality disorders aren't immediately obvious to other people. Yes, you may see that a person is being egotistical or socially anxious or intense or detached or a bit of a show-off. But in any given situation, you might not get the impression that the person has a problem. It's only if you interact with such people enough to know that they're almost always that way, that they have only one way of approaching things, that you realize that something is off. Well, in the case of our final disorder, the schizotypal personality disorder, it's pretty obvious from the start that this person is, if not psychologically disturbed, at least different, because they're unusual in how they behave, what they think, and often in just how they look. They don't hurt anybody. They're just highly eccentric people. First, people with schizotypal personality disorder have unusual thoughts and ideas. Unlike people who are schizophrenic, they don't have hallucinations or delusions, but they do have unusual ideas. For example, their interpretations of events are often quite odd. They may explain things that happen or other people's behavior in ways that don't make much sense to anybody else. I knew a guy in high school who, in retrospect, was certainly schizotypal. One day, he and I and some other students were wondering about why another friend of ours hadn't come to school that day. And the schizotypal guy said, maybe he went to Europe. Well, did he say anything about going to Europe? No. In fact, he's probably never been out of the state. But this guy felt fairly sure that maybe he went to Europe. It was just odd. Schizotypal people also tend to have odd, magical, and superstitious beliefs that most people don't have. Usually not things that are downright crazy, but things that are questionable and that most people don't believe. Their speech can be idiosyncratic. It's sometimes hard to follow exactly what they're talking about because they use loose and vague language and digress a lot. They also tend to have odd mannerisms and expressions. They might never look at other people when they talk, or they might not nod as you're talking to them. They might bluntly end the conversation by just walking away. And they tend to dress in unusual ways. They wear clothes that don't match or don't fit. And it's not to make some sort of fashion statement or because they identify with some group that dresses that way. They're not trying to be different. They just are. There's not really anything wrong with any of this, and it doesn't hurt anybody. It's just an odd package of eccentricities. The worst thing is that other people think they're odd and often avoid them. If you think of the people that you have known who everybody thought were truly and inexplicably weird, they might have been schizotypal. And again, I'm not talking just about people who were different from you. These people are different from everybody. Not surprisingly, people with schizotypal personality disorder have problems in social interactions and relationships. They usually aren't able to manage interactions in a skilled manner, and they're often stiff or socially inappropriate. They realize that they are different and don't quite fit in, and they're anxious in social situations, particularly those that involve unfamiliar people. They interact when they have to, but they often prefer to keep to themselves when possible. In these last two lectures, we've covered the 10 official personality disorders. There are obviously other ways in which people's styles of reacting are inflexible or inappropriate or maladaptive. But these are the ones that psychiatrists and practicing psychologists have mostly agreed on. Well, why do personality disorders develop? As usual, it's a combination of genetic and environmental factors, but a couple of important things stick out. Personality disorders appear to be more heritable than most normal personality characteristics. When we discussed genetics previously, We saw that most personality variables have heritability coefficients in the 0.3 to 0.6 range. But these 10 disorders have heritabilities in the 0.5 to 0.8 range. That is, 50 to 80% of the variability that we see in these disorders seems to be genetic. Although each of these disorders involves a set of specific characteristics, it's not likely that the whole syndrome is inherited as a package. In other words, you probably don't inherit paranoid personality disorder or borderline personality disorder as a unit. Instead, research suggests that the various components of personality disorders are inherited separately. For example, the tendency for emotional dysregulation is inherited separately from the tendency to be impulsive versus inhibited, which is separate from the tendency to be antisocial, which is different from compulsivity, which is separate from low empathy, and so on. Only when a person inherits a certain set of individual tendencies does the pattern for a particular personality disorder appear. So there are strong genetic predispositions to develop these sorts of problems. But it probably also takes some unusual sorts of environmental influences, probably in the form of parental neglect or abuse, or situations in which maladaptive behaviors are rewarded for a full-blown disorder to appear. The ways in which genes and environment interact to create personality disorders have become a very hot topic of research.